Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain.
Somebody crowd me with love. Somebody force me to care. Somebody make me come through. I'll always be there as frightened as you to help us survive. Being alive. Being alive. Being alive.
I could not think of a more appropriate song to open with, although she recorded it some years ago. But since it was an album I think I was helping produce, I figured I might as well plug myself as well. The song Being Alive, being sung by the incredibly talented and now superstar Alexandra Billings, who I have known for, I think, about 30 years. Alex, what a ride you have been on.
I love you so much. I don't even know what to do with myself right now, Paul. I literally don't know what to do with myself. And I have to tell you, you know what's really interesting about that song you played? First of all, boy, she's loud, isn't she? My God.
I think she still is.
Good God almighty, calm down. But that song that you just played was done at Southport Records in Chicago. And it was the only song on that album where my father was present in the booth while I was singing.
Mm. And he's a big part of your story.
He's a huge part of my story. And what's interesting about that, it's one of the reasons I can't listen to that album. That's the first time, do you know what's the first time I've heard that song or a piece of that song since we recorded it back in 1925. I don't remember when we recorded it.
I think it was 94, but okay.
It was so great because he was a musical director and a music teacher and a concert pianist, and he really brought music. Our language was music. And he would sit in the booth with Ralph Lampkin.
Yes.
And the two of them, and Joni, Pilato, and Sparrow, and they would all sit in the booth, and I was so intimidated having my dad there. And it was just going terribly, just terribly. Because I'm not a great singer. I'm not one of those singers that you know what I mean. Like I'm not a great singer.
You have developed over the. I think back then maybe it was a different world for you. Today, for example, when I heard you in the finale of Transparent, the musical finale, which we'll deal with that later. Your talent has blossomed, has come to, and don't tell me you're not a great singer, because one of the things, you know, we're talking, it's like you and I just sat down for a cup of coffee and we forgot that there's people listening to us. So
yeah,
I think
true.
We probably should clarify, you are an actress, a singer, a teacher, an activist, an openly transgendered woman. Let's put that out there. Everywhere from, I think the first thing that I remember you doing back in 2005, Romy and Michelle in the beginning, because I remember watching that on television. But the reason that triggered, and of course you've been in Transparent from day one playing Davina. We want to talk about that for sure, because that's such an amazing show. But what triggered my desire to say we must talk is because starting January 20th of 2020, you are making history on Broadway in New York. I could say what you're going to do, but you tell people what you're about to do.
Oh, I'm doing, just riddled with fear and self-doubt. I am playing Madame Morrible in the Broadway production of Wicked.
First openly transgendered actor to play that role, and I think to be in Wicked. But not necessarily on Broadway, because, of course, you just recently, like a season ago, did The Nap. So you've been there before.
I have. That was my debut. And weirdly and beautifully, that season, Kate Bornstein and Miss Peppermint were also transgender activists and actors, were also on Broadway. So all three of us made all of our Broadway debuts in three different shows at the same time, which was amazing.
Where I think you've made the mark, Alex, is, and I remember watching you in How to Get Away with Murder and Eli Stone and Grey's Anatomy. Every time you were on anything, I was watching it, recording it, and watching it over and over. And you were, in many ways, you always correct me if I say something wrong, but it's as though you were typecast. Here's a transgendered actor, so we're going to have her play a transgendered role, and you're fabulous in it. For me, what Wicked tells us, among other roles, because even Transparent, you are who you are. We're finally getting to the point where transgendered actors, it's not about being transgendered. It's because you're a great talent, and a woman plays that role. I saw Rue McClanahan in that role once, so there's your comment.
Oh, did you really? Yes. Oh, that's fantastic.
Just think, you're going to probably be standing in the same space Rue McClanahan like stood in.
Oh,
let,
my
let
Lord.
Let that freak you out when you get there.
I love it.
But am I right? That's the difference. It's no longer get me the transgendered actress. It's Alex is right for this role.
Well, I think it's an interesting point you bring up, Paul. But I think it's, if you remember 150 years ago when we were at your house and we watched, what was it, Karen Sisko, I think.
Yeah.
All together, a bunch of friends and you and I, and you had this beautiful party, and it was just amazing, as all of your generous and you're such a generous soul, my love.
Thank you.
But the great thing that's happened since then is that we're not only cast as murderers or victims of some weird disease, or I once told my manager, I'm not playing any more killers, and I'm not going to wear any more hospital gowns, and I'm not going to visit anybody in the hospital, I'm not going to pretend to go to the hospital, and I'm not going to take care of anybody in the hospital. I'm done. Done doing those things. And I didn't work for about 2 years. Literally didn't work. So there was I think Hollywood didn't really know what to do with this, and still doesn't. I mean, let's be honest. It's not like you can name 5 shows where transgender actors or actresses or others are the leads of a show. You can't do that.
Yet.
But we are at a point where that must begin to happen. And I'll tell you something interesting, this Hallmark debacle.
Yes.
That happened recently, where Hallmark had a commercial of 2 women getting married and kissing, and then this bogus pretend faux organization called 1 Million Moms, which is actually one person, a woman named Monica Cole. It's not 1 million anybody, it's her, who goes around trying to stop people from living their lives for some unknown reason. She seems like an extremely unhappy woman. But anyway, she got Hallmark to pull this commercial. And then GLAAD and HRC and the rest of the queer community got together and wrote letters and protested, along with people like William Shatner, may I just add. And Hallmark, 2 or 3 days later, said, oops, just kidding. We're sorry.
Well, okay. Can you forgive them for that, I assume, right? They made a mistake.
Well, listen, here's the thing. Forgiveness goes a certain amount when you're talking about political freedom and the American right to love and be a citizen of this country. So I will accept their apology, yes, but here's what I don't accept. I don't accept the fact that they didn't check out who this 1 Million Moms organization was in the first place. They fell right into the bigoted trap, and they decided to actually bring it to fruition. So they did no research. They took no ownership or responsibility for the people they might have harmed, meaning the youth, the LGBT youth, that say to themselves, hey, Mom, how come those 2 women can't get married and they don't want to show it on the channel that shows the Golden Girls? And then you have to have an explanation to that young child about why they don't exist if they are queer. So the damage they've done has already been done. So, yes, I accept their apology. But we are in a place right now in our country where there is an administration who is systematically trying to disassemble our democracy. One block at a time. And the people that get annihilated, the first group out are the LGBT humans, and the first group out of the LGBT humans is the T. So we have got to have representation everywhere, and we begin with art, because art is the reflection of life. So we have got to stop saying, you know what, isn't it great that trans people are no longer killing people on screen? And isn't it great that we're no longer victims in a hospital? No. No, it's not great. What's great is put us in leads of television shows. Put us on the news as newscasters. Put us as people who are sports announcers. Put us in places where there is a sense of normalcy so that people understand we are part of the human fabric.
And I really want to talk about your career, but I have to ask you. So you must have not been pleased when Log Cabin Republicans came out before anything has even happened in the election world and endorsed President Trump for re-election. And that's the group of gay Republicans.
Those poor lost souls are truly doing the best they can with what they know. I believe that they are a group of human beings who are so filled with such a deep sense of self-loathing that they cannot see through their own past. They want assimilation in such a way that it eradicates and erases who they actually are. And I'm not talking about acting or behaving gay or lesbian or trans or whatever that's supposed to mean. I'm not talking about any of those stereotypes. I'm talking about the fundamental belief that you are one human being in love with another human being, and you allow yourself and others to show it. And that group of people does not believe that's true.
So how far along the path, as I take a step into your television world of Transparent, how much did Transparent, I mean, it's an Amazon Prime show, right? It's not an NBC show. How much did it change the world?
Well, you'd have to ask the world, really.
The world is my next guest.
Thank God. That's going to be a long show. Here's what I can tell you. I can tell you that before Transparent, I'm a social media freak. I love it. I'm all over it.
Well, I follow you everywhere, so I know.
Oh, my God. I love it. I can't get enough of it. And the reason I love it is...
I don't even understand TikTok, and I'm only on it because of you.
I am in love with TikTok. You can't keep me off. I drag my poor wife into my TikTok videos. She does it begrudgingly. But
I don't even get it. And I've seen her on them, too, and I don't even get what it is. But that's another conversation. Talk about Transparent.
It's a whole other thing, isn't it, really? I know. Bless their hearts. Here's the great thing about it. Let me tell you why TikTok is so important. I get messages, and this ties into your question, because I get messages from people, youth. And when I say youth, and I mean queer youth and trans youth, and when I say youth, I mean 7, 8, 9 years old. I get messages from these people who say, it's so great to see you and your wife. I love seeing this video. You make me so happy. I can't wait to see what you have to say next. On Instagram, I get messages from LGBT youth. And again, these are like teenagers and 20-something from all over the world. Korea, North Korea, South Korea, Saudi Arabia, Africa. Places where being queer is punishable by cutting off fingers, limbs, being thrown off buildings. So this is their only window into any adult queer human being that they know. And that multiplied after Transparent happened. So Transparent gave me a portal to climb through so that I'm able to be heard and in touch with queer youth from all over the world. So I don't know if it changed the world, but it certainly changed mine.
And your role, of course, grew as that show went on. I do have to just touch base with you about Jeffrey Tambor, because I loved him as Moira Pfefferman. I understood the allegations that went on. I don't know what you can say or what not, but... your feeling about the last season without him and stuff, it's what had to happen, I imagine.
Well, I think all of us went through a healing period. And, you know, once Jeffrey left the show, was forced to leave the show, we all thought, okay, let's just do it. We're just going to continue on. Everything's going to be great. But we were so devastated and torn apart by this thing that he created and manifested on set. We really couldn't do it. So we all took a year off, and we just kind of, and we are very close people. I talk to Judith all the time. Mm-hmm. I talk to Amy Landecker, is a very, very dear friend of mine. So we've all been through the war together.
And do people still, do you all still talk to, do you all still talk to Jeffrey too?
No, I'm waiting for him to admit what he's done.
And then you would forgive.
If he admitted what he did, if he took ownership of it, if he tried to make an amend to the people that he hurt and abused, and then apologized, yes, I would. But he would have to do all of those things. That's a long list.
And for people who would say, and I understand the Me Too movement and all that, and we're not debating that. But I think the place you come from, and again, we haven't talked about this yet on the show, you yourself have been living with HIV since 1994. And the reason I picked being alive is because you, in recent interviews, when you're sort of asked, what do you think of your stardom and your celebrity? And I know your humor. And so I just could hear you saying it. But your answer is always, what are you talking about? I should have been dead by now.
Well,
but you
yeah.
believe that, right?
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's true. I mean, there's nothing to believe. That's not, you know, that's not a philosophy. The doctor actually said that to me when I was diagnosed. He said, the best thing for you to do probably is to max out your credit cards, go on a trip, buy a coat, get a car, do all the things you want to do because you're not going to be around to pay the bill.
Mm.
I mean, that was the diagnosis for everybody. Nobody lived. There was no such thing. When I was diagnosed, there was no such thing as a long-term survivor. Everyone died. So that was just it. That was just kind of a thing.
And
so that's not, you know, that's not a philosophy.
You also took a step. You were born a male. You were born Scott. I think when we first met, you were Shantae at the Baton. Remember those days? And and what's always been amazing is that your wife, Chris Ann, who you've been with for a billion years, and I remember asking her, you guys were over for dinner one night, and I'm sure you remember when I put out sort of nice glassware when I admitted to you that it was nice glassware. You then demanded a paper cup because you refused to drink out of the glass.
I did. I remember that.
And,
I do.
But anyway, I remember asking Chris Ann and saying, you know, you met when she was Scott and whatever. And her answer was so beautiful, which is, I don't really care what outer form this being takes. I love this person. Scott, Shantae, Alex, it all works for me, she said. Mm-hmm. And so many years later, yeah. That's still a true statement.
It really is. She actually just said that to somebody. I can't remember who it was, but somebody in an interview was asking her that almost that very thing, and that's exactly what she always said. It's mystifying to me. I always tell her, and anyone who will listen, her story is much more interesting than mine, far more fascinating. I mean, here's a woman who tried to get Ronald Reagan elected president. She comes from West Virginia. She moved to the Midwest and was, you know, brought up with Southern Midwestern values her whole life, and then she falls in love with a mixed-race trans woman who eventually gets diagnosed with AIDS. What are you talking about?
It's the perfect next step.
It's a fairy tale with a, you know, surprise ending. Surprise! So, you know, I'm always fascinated with... There's a great question that a friend asked about a year ago, which was, and she's trans, and she said, I think the question for all trans people is who will love us? Because we're always afraid, once our transition begins, that no one will really, really love us.
Mm.
And I've been loved by someone for going on 43 years now.
You chose to address the transition issue. I won't give too many detail because I'd rather people kind of watch it, but in the... Now I'm forgetting. I think it was the third season of Transparent where, you know, the question always comes up. Have you had the surgery? What have you done? Whatever. And you chose. And when I saw this episode, I was curious and I spoke to a mutual friend of ours and who basically said you decided that it was your choice. It was your request of maybe of Jill or whoever or the writers to say, I want to have this scene. And I'm talking about the massage scene when you're with your boyfriend and there's mm-hmm. there's a reveal for you. What was in your mind? What was behind that?
Well, boy, that's a good question. I got to a point in my life where I was tired of either dodging the question or being ashamed of the question. And I am only speaking for myself,
mm-hmm.
Of being ashamed of the question, being concerned about what other people would think of me or my marriage or my, I just got tired of it. And also, I was on a show with, you know, a bunch of lunatics who literally, if I just said, hey, you guys, I'd like to hula hoop on fire carrying a baby. How do you feel about that?
She'd have worked it in.
Jill Followay, who's clearly insane, would have gone, great, love it. So I thought, you know, what hasn't been done and what do I need to say? And that was it. I thought, and the only thing I knew, and I talked at length about this with my wife before I went into the writers and asked for this, but the only thing I knew is that I wanted to do a nude scene. That was really all I wanted to do, is to show, at the time I was, I think, 55, a 55-year-old transgender, female transgender body who had been living with AIDS for over a couple of decades. That's the body I wanted to show. I'm not built like Raquel Welch. That's not the kind of thing I wanted to do. It wasn't about vanity. It was about
truth.
It was about, well, yes, and it was also about saying to other trans people, here's the way my body looks, and I'm actually becoming okay with it. I want you to be okay with yours, whatever it looks like, and whatever you want to do, and whatever you want to show or don't show. I don't want you to live in shame. And Jill Soloway and the writers are the ones who came up with that scene. Because the only thing I said was, I don't want to have a sex scene, so I don't know how we're going to do it, but I don't want to be having sex. That's not something I'm interested in doing. So I don't know how we're going to do this. So Jill and the writers are the one who came up with that concept, which I thought was brilliant.
It was quite rememberable, stunning, and that's why I haven't revealed what it shows, because I think people who can, all you got to do is go on Amazon Prime. Am I right? I think it was either episode 2 or episode 3 of season 3. Am I right? Do you remember?
That's right. I do. Yeah. Yes. I don't remember which episode it was, but yeah, that was the, yeah. And the great thing about it is that it's a surprise, and it's also, you just kind of go, oh, okay. Well,
right.
Yeah.
Right. And by the way, when Chris Ann watched the episode, maybe for the first time or whatever, what reaction did she give you?
You know, I think it's funny. I don't remember, which leads me to believe that she liked it. I think she liked it. You know, she was nervous about it. You know, nobody wants their spouse naked on. Oh, well, maybe not nobody, but she certainly didn't. You know, she was not like, I don't necessarily want your naked body on television for the rest of eternity. But, you know, she's very much behind me in everything that I do. And so, you know, I think she liked it because of the way it was done, I think.
It was done very classy. And by the way,
yeah, I think so.
Before, I mean, our time is racing, and this is why I needed hours with you. But I want, you know, you remember, you're Chicago's very own. I mean, you're at the Steppenwolf, and you're doing a scholarship, which I want to talk more with you about, at UCLA. I mean, I just think when you were back in your 20s or when life was at a certain dark point, and I know you tried to kill yourself, you went through some pretty dark times. You look at where you are now, you're glad you made the right decision to enjoy. I mean, now you're having drinks with Bradley Whitford and I'm sitting with a water commissioner. I mean, think about it.
I'd like to be sitting with the water commissioner.
No, he talks about poop a lot. It's a whole nother problem.
Well, so did Bradley and I.
But but am I right? You look at your life now and you're like, oh my God, I'm so glad I didn't miss this.
I say this all the time now, and I'm going to have a T-shirt made, but I really believe that this is true. I have no idea whose life I'm living right now, but it sure is a hell of a lot of fun.
It's amazing.
I really could never, I mean, Chris Ann said this to me a couple of days ago. She said, did you ever think in your life that you would be packing, because that's what we're doing literally today, be packing to go be in a Broadway show, and not just one Broadway show, but two, one of them being Wicked. Did you ever in your life imagine that this would be true?
For you, if this were the 50s, it would be like getting a guest shot in I Love Lucy, right? I mean,
no, it's crazy. It's ridiculous. This well, the movie itself has been with me since I was, you know, 5 or 6 years old, yeah. And it's something that I teach. Oh, by the way, you said UCLA. It's USC. I'm at USC.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said, yes,
so
USC.
Okay.
My mistake.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
The scholarship is at USC, and it's fine. I just wanted to get it straight in case, you know, and my bosses are listening.
Right.
So, I come from teachers and performers, and that's exactly what happened in my life, literally. I am an amalgamation of my parents. And so every time I step on the ground of my university, I'm filled with gratefulness. And every time I step foot on a stage, I'm filled with gratefulness. So I have a life right now that's an embarrassment of riches. And, you know, not all of it is fantastic. There are some terrible things that happen, but certainly I don't even want to talk about my teeth. I don't want to talk about it. But the amount of gifts and blessings that have happened, and it really is because, and I put you in this category too, Paul, because of human beings in my life that have lifted me up at a time. Remember, you were my friend. I want to say this about you, Mr. Paul Lisnick. You were my friend at a time and a supporter of mine at a time when most people in our business treated me like a famous drag queen. Mm. And you never did that to me, Paul. Never. And I never forgot that. And there are people like you, angels, I call them, that lift me up. And it's not just about my career. I'm not even talking about my career. I'm talking about as a human being on the planet. It's the reason I teach, because I want to instill in other people, whether they're LGBT or not, that their job on the planet is to lift up the strangers they've yet to meet.
Well, I treated you the way you should be treated because there has always been a light in you. I wouldn't have predicted you would end up the star that you have become. I couldn't see that, but I could see something special, and I could see that you were somebody who was never going to give up. You were going to, and you took it. You took it to LA. You took it to New York. You took every step to make it work. And now people can go see you, as I will get to New York, because I'll be at the stage door, and if you don't let me backstage, you're never going to live this down. But starting January 20th, you can see Alexandra Billings as Madame Morrible in Wicked, a show I've seen. I don't even know how many times I've seen this show, a million times. I've done specials on it and everything else. And of course, I couldn't play you. You're not in it yet. So I wanted to go out with a clip from Wicked, but I didn't really feel like listening to Idina Menzel. So instead, I decided, no, let's stick with Alex and let's do something that says something about who you are. So while being alive was something you did a long time ago, with your permission, my dear, I wanted to go out by playing something that I think you will acknowledge is about who you and who others need to be today. It's from the Transparent musical finale. It's called Let Her Be Okay, and this is Alex Billings.
We will be okay.
We'll be okay.
We all fall from the tree someday.
We'll be okay.
Lift our voices up to play. Each other along the way, and we will be okay. Let us be
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnick. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnick.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.